Here comes the rush again. He gets it away, and it is incomplete at the 5-yard line. A penalty marker is down.
I couldn't believe the flag was dropped on that play.
I can remember it vividly. It's like a nightmare. It never gets out of my head.
I hit quarterback like that many times, and no flag was ever thrown.
According to the rules that we played under, it was a really bad call.
I made the right call. That's the only thing that counts.
A penalty marker is down. I don't know if the Patriots are going to be called for roughing the passer or what.
I think it was such a, like, where did that come from, call?
My reaction was like, what? How could we do that?
Every game the refs would say, don't hit the quarterback in the head.
Trigger Bear wasn't even close to roughing Kenny Stabler.
A flag is down, and Ray Hamilton is throwing his arms in the air, roughing the passer. First down, Oakland, with 52 seconds left.
Yeah, I thought it was a good call. I guess we're even now.
They're never going to change it, so, you know, I'll get over it eventually.
They've been playing pro football around here for over a half century with varying degrees of success. Four championships since the turn of the century have made their recent stretch among the best in NFL history. But ask those who've been around for a while. The events of December 18, 1976 will never be forgotten by those who were there or were watching. They capped off an amazing season that nobody saw coming by maybe the best team in the first 40 years of the franchise. This is the story of Grogan and Nelson, Cunningham and Francis, Hannah, Gray, and Fairbanks. This is the story of the one that got away. I'm Bob Soucy, and this is Rough Injustice, the story of the 1976 New England Patriots.
Cunningham gets the call inside the 10, inside the 5, inside the end zone. Touchdown.
He sets it up. He shoots it long and deep for Roger Carr. And it is intercepted by Michael Hayes at the 2.
Johnson in the left slot. Francis in the right slot. Back to pass. Grogan fires over the middle. It is complete. To Andy Johnson at the 10, at the 5. And he's going to go in. A touchdown.
You get this team coming out of nowhere. 3-11 to 11-3. I mean, who predicted that? Who thought that would happen? Certainly none of us around the team did. I guess the coaches did and the players did. They believed. But we had to see it to believe it. And we did.
For two generations, Gil Santos was the superb voice of the Patriots. From their ragtag roots in the 60s, through their three Super Bowl wins in the last decade. Nobody's more qualified to talk about the highs and lows of the first 50 years of the franchise. A franchise that, in the mid-70s, was struggling for relevance during a boom in Boston sports.
Yeah, they were number four. Well, it was a totally different time in the way pro football is reported, both locally and nationally. Covering that team at that time, all of us, radio, TV, newspaper guys, we wanted people to begin to recognize that this team from the old AFL was now becoming an NFL team. And it took a lot of convincing, not only for the nation, but for New England. I mean, New England football fans, before the Patriots came around, were rooting for the New York Giants. I mean, I know, I was a kid, we didn't have a team in New England. My brother and I used to go over to a couple of the local Portuguese sporting clubs and watch the Giants on Sunday. And they had one television, small, black and white, and put it on sort of a stage. And they had lined up chairs, and we'd sit there and watch the Giants. So the Patriots had to try to commandeer the old Giant fans, at least get them to watch them a little bit, and cultivate the young fans to the fact that here was your football team. You don't have to root for one that plays in New York or New Jersey. Here's your team right here. And I felt, quite frankly, that I was not only the play-by-play guy, but I was trying very hard to tell people how good this team could be. Yeah, you ought to take a look at these guys because they can play.
The thing that was a battle, the thing that we had to do, it was establish ourselves as a legitimate franchise when we walked into a place that was New York Giants territory. And that lingered a long time. And, you know, it was always a challenge to say, hey, we're the better franchise. We're the better operation. We belong.
Patrick Sullivan was the son of Billy Sullivan, the team's founder. He would later become general manager. But in his younger years, he had a front row seat as the franchise fought to survive.
It was really a culmination of a lot of dreams that my father had, that, you know, that we'd have sellout crowds, enthusiastic, and the team would be well accepted throughout New England. And I think that was, it was, you know, after, You know, the first 6 years of the franchise, we actually had pretty decent teams, and we were pretty competitive in the old AFL, and those games were very exciting, and it was fun to be part of that. And then, you know, we went through a series of losing seasons, 68, 69, 70. 70 was really a bad year.
Those were great days. I look back on them fondly. They're so, compared to today, it was like town teams. They used to have a glorified town team. That's what it was. Like the Attleboro Jewelers or something like that.
Ron Hobson covered the team for the Patriot Ledger for the first 50 years of its existence. You've heard some of the bizarre stories of the Patriots in the 60s. He's here to tell you that they're all true, especially the one about former coach Cleve Rush at his electrifying press conference.
I was in the second row when it happened. He was introducing his new general manager, George Sauer. There was a live microphone. He went to the dais and he touched the microphone and went, whoa, and screaming. And we thought, we didn't know what the, this guy's a comedian. No, he wasn't. He it was Danny Marr. Dan Meyer was one of the sons of the owners, original owners. He realized what was happening. He left his seat, went rushing, knocking the cameras over, and pulling the plug out on the mic. And Rush then slumped to the floor. And he got up, dusted himself off, and he said, I heard you Boston media were tough, but this is ridiculous.
It was one step up, two steps back for the team through much of the 60s. But after a nomadic decade that saw them playing home games at a number of different sites, including Fenway Park, Harvard Stadium, and one 1968 game in Birmingham, Alabama, they finally got a home of their own in Foxborough as Schaefer Stadium opened for the 1971 season. Current Pats owner Robert Kraft was a season ticket holder, and his son Jonathan, now the team president, has vivid memories of their trips down Route 1.
It was the best time we all spent together as the male part of our family. It was really special. We looked forward to the games. My dad used to go to a deli in Brookline called Provisors and buy roast beef sandwiches with mustard and get pickles. And we had six seats, but we'd always bring a couple friends, and those old turnstiles, you have kids and you just sort of hand your tickets and you push a bunch of people through. And then because you were on benches, you would just squeeze in. And we used to absolutely love coming to the games. And there was nothing like going to an NFL game as much as we loved going to the Garden in Fenway. Just that tradition of going to Schaefer Stadium and watching the Patriots, even though the team wasn't usually that good, was something we all look forward to.
The stadium cost only a little more than $7 million to build, a few hundred thousand less than Dante Hightower is making this year. Even in 1970s dollars, that was cheap, and it showed.
My brother Danny loves to say how until he was like 14 or 15 years old, he used to ask my father to take him down to the bathroom because you had that one concourse level and you had the troughs and the crowd would be 90% male, and of the 90% males, probably 95% of them were fairly inebriated. And going in, if you're a little boy, into those dark, dank bathrooms with the troughs was a scary experience. We remember that. We used to see guys all around us literally having glass bottles of liquor with them. My father used to try to tell us not to pay attention to that. But we knew the people that sat around us. And one of the things we all used to do was we would always bring a couple rolls of toilet paper into the game with us because we sat up in the 200 level. And a group around us, when the Patriots would score a touchdown, which didn't happen that often, you'd unfurl about the first five or six turns. And then you'd launch the toilet paper into the air and you'd watch it unravel and you try to hit the field, and we all thought that was pretty cool. And of the section we sat in, there must have been, you know, 60 or 70 people that did that, and we all enjoyed it.
Much of the action in the stands was more interesting than what was going on the field, but that would start to change as a new sheriff came to town and whipped the franchise into shape. The arrival of Chuck Fairbanks. That's next when we return.
You're listening to Rough and Justice, the story of the 1976 New England Patriots on 98.5, The Sports Hub.